Good morning. Our meeting's called to order. Mr. Cook, you have a statement to make?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I'm to notice that this meeting contains all items of the proposed agenda that are in the office of the Secretary of State, as required by Section 551 of the Code, referred to in the open meeting act. I'd like to use that to be able to hear the official record of this meeting. So that everyone in our audience will kind of have an idea of how the meeting is going to go today, I'd like to cover a few points here. Each individual wishing to speak before the Texas Parking Law Act Commission must first fill out and sign a speaker registration card and have a label out there on each paper. For each item on the agenda on which you wish to speak. The chairman is in charge of this meeting, and by law, it is his duty to preserve order, correct the order of the hearing, and recognize persons to be heard. I will be assisting the chairman today as charging it off. We have sign up cards for everyone wishing to speak, and the chairman will call names of those cards one at a time. Each person will be allowed to speak from the podium up front one at a time. When your name is called, please come to the podium, state your name, and who you represent, if anyone other than yourself. And the chairman may also call a known expert, the expert you have to be named. Then state your position on the agenda item under consideration and add the 40 facts that will help the commission understand your concerns and issues. Please limit your remarks to the specific agenda item under consideration. Each person who wants to address the commission will have 3 minutes to speak. I will keep track of your time and notify you when your 3 minutes are up on this handy dandy little stoplight thing you do right there. Your time may be extended if the commissioner has a question for you or if they get into a discussion about the issue. That time will not be signed again. Statements which are merely arguing that you are critical of others will not be followed. There is a microphone at the podium, so it's not necessary to raise your voice. Shouting will not be tolerated, and I also ask that you show proper respect to the commissioners as well as other members of the office. You will not be recognized out of turn by raising your hand or interrupting others. Disruptive or offensive behaviors will not be tolerated unless you are in the objection. If you would like to submit written material to the commission, please give them to Carol Hoover on Bell House as soon as you get my route. Assuming you will pass the written material to the commission.
Thanks, Bob. Got all that out of the way. Now, next up, approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Do you have a motion? Motion by Commissioner Friedkin, second by Commissioner Holt. All in favor, please say aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Next is the acceptance of a revised donations list. That list has been distributed in the agenda. Is there a motion for approval? Motion by Bivens, second by Commissioner Holmes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Next is service awards and special recognition. Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, we have a lot of really, really important folks to recognize here today, and I know that I'm proud of our employees and the folks who volunteer and do so much for TPWD, as I know you are, and we're going to take a few minutes here and recognize a number of those folks for their service to the department, to the state, and to the nation. First of all, under our retirement certificates, recognition. We have one individual, and this is a very, very special individual to me. He and I have been friends for a long, long time. James E. Jim Dillard is a Program Specialist 5 from Mineral Wells, Texas, and is retiring with 40 years of service to TPWD. Jim Dillard worked as a wildlife biologist for Texas Parks and Wildlife Department for 40 years and will retire at the end of this month. He began his career with TPWD in the summers of 1965, I was just a mere child then, and 1966 as a summer intern for TPWD on the Edwards Plateau Regulatory District and on the Matador Wildlife Management Area. Jim graduated from Texas A&M University in January of 1967 with a B.S. degree in Wildlife Science. and became a full-time TPWD employee working on the statewide Morning Dove project at that time. 6 months later, he was drafted to serve in the United States Army for 2 years, including a tour of duty in South Vietnam. Returning to TPWD, he became the district wildlife biologist in Dumas on the Panhandle Regulatory District. In 1973, he transferred to Mineral Wells, where he spent 22 years as a district wildlife biologist in the Possum Kingdom Wildlife District. In 1995, Jim was promoted to technical guidance biologist under TPWD's Private Lands and Habitat Program and worked in a 21-county area in the Cross Timbers and Prairies and the Lower Rolling Plains ecological regions, providing wildlife and habitat management recommendations and assistance to private landowners. He is a certified wildlife biologist by the Wildlife Society and a member of the Wildlife Society and the Texas chapter of the Wildlife Society. Jim wrote a column for 10 years entitled Cross Timbers Wildlife News that was published each month in the Mineral Wells Index and several other North Texas newspapers. Retiring with 40 years of service, my friend James E. Jim Dillard. Now, into our service awards, from the law enforcement division, we've got Ken Baker, another gentleman that I've known a long time and has been a great employee and has done a great service to TPWD and the state of Texas. Ken Baker began his career with TPWD by attending the State Game Warden Academy at Texas A&M University in September of 1971. He was commissioned in January 1972 and assigned to his duty station in Hidalgo County. He worked for Hidalgo County for 30 years and was promoted to captain for the Rio Grande Valley District in 2003. With 35 years of service in our law enforcement division, Captain Ken Baker. Also, another old acquaintance and friend of mine, from the Law Enforcement Division, Garth W.S. Robinson, Jr., is a major here in Austin with 35 years of service. Bill Robinson began his career with Texas Parks and Wildlife Department when he attended the 19th Game Warden School held at Texas A&M University in 1966. His first station assignment was Marble Falls in Burnett County. He was then assigned to Travis County in 1975 and continued to primarily enforce water safety on Lake Travis, Lake Austin, Town Lake, and the Colorado River below Austin. He was then promoted to Lieutenant Instructor at the Game Warden Academy in Austin in 1978. In 1979, he was promoted to District Supervisor in Kerrville, where he remained for 13 years. In 1993, Bill was promoted to Assistant Commander, Fisheries Enforcement at the Austin Headquarters. Bill retired from TPWD in April of 1996. After a brief retirement, he was reinstated in 1997 as a field game warden assigned to Hays County, which included assignment to Lake Travis. He transferred to Comal County in 2002 and was promoted to Chief of Inland Fisheries Enforcement at Austin Headquarters, Chief of Fisheries Enforcement at Austin Headquarters in 2004. Bill currently holds the rank of Major, Chief of Fisheries Enforcement, and serves as a Vice Chairman on the Gulf of Mexico Fisheries Management Council Law Enforcement Advisory Panel. With 35 years of service, Major Bill Robinson, Jr. From the State Park Division, Ellen Buchanan, manager 5 from Tyler, Texas, with 25 years of service. Ellen began her career at TPWD on August the 17th, 1981, as park superintendent at Monument Hill and Crisey Brewery State Historical Sites. While there, she oversaw the development of the Crisey site and was instrumental in organizing a basic program. In November of 1994, she transferred to Martin Baez Jr. State Park, where she worked closely with resource conservation and enhanced the revenue stream. She also served as chairman of the board of the Jasper Lake Sam Rayburn Area Chamber of Commerce. While there, she graduated from leadership from our leadership program, from the leadership Jasper and leadership Southeast Texas programs. On December 1st of 2003, Ellen became regional director of the Region 8 State Parks, which covers the northeast section of Texas. She works the Big Thicket Association and the Big Thicket National Heritage Trust. Ellen is a graduate of TPWD's Natural Leaders Class 5. She is passionate about the state park system and the conservation of the state's cultural and natural resources and the continued development of our employees. With 25 years of service, Regional Director Ellen Buchanan. Again, from our State Parks Division, Thomas M. Fisher, Program Supervisor 2 at Mahia, Texas, with 25 years. Tom Fisher began his career with TPWD in June of 1981 at Old Fort Parker State Historical Site. In 1986, he transferred to Mission Taos State Historical Park, and then in 1990, transferred to Fort Parker State Park. In his 25 years with Texas State Parks, he has worked to protect both the natural and cultural resources of the park, developed educational programs to help the public appreciate those resources, and provide support facilities so that the public can enjoy interacting with those resources. At Mission Taos, Tom was involved in acquiring additional property to protect the village site, the Native Indian village site, and display boards to tell the history of the Spanish contact with the natives of East Texas. At Old Fort Parker, Tom developed educational and historical programs and displays depicting the history of the site for school groups. In addition, Tom has worked to develop a nature center and support for the Confederate Reunion Grounds State Historic Site. One of the more rewarding projects has been obtaining a historical marker for the Civilian Conservation Corps camp that constructed Fort Parker State Park. With 25 years of service, Tom Fisher. Good. Thanks, Tom. From our infrastructure division, also with 25 years, William M. McDonald, Jr., Architect 2, here in Austin, Texas. Bill McDonald, native of Hillsborough, Texas, graduated from Texas A&M University in 1977 with a Bachelor of Science degree in Landscape Architecture. He began his career with Texas Parks and Wildlife Department Repair and Technical Support Division in 1981. Bill has been instrumental in the design and development of approximately 23 new and redeveloped state park projects during the 1980s and 1990s, including Choke Canyon and Cooper Lake State Parks. He continues to enjoy being involved in repairs and site improvements to department facilities for the Infrastructure Division, Planning and Design Section. Currently, Bill serves on the project design teams for the Sheldon Lake Environmental Learning Center and Indian Lodge Rehabilitation Projects. With 25 years of service, William M. Bill McDonald, Jr. Thank you. Forest Service from State Parks. Kenneth G. Coleman, Park Ranger 2, Smithville, Texas. Kenneth Coleman began his career with TPWD as a seasonal employee at Mission State Park August 1, 1986. After 4 years, he was promoted to Park Ranger 2. During his 20-year tenure, Kenneth has put his pride into keeping Mission State Park a beautiful park to visit through daily maintenance and resource preservation duties. Additionally, Kenneth has been active in Bastrop State Park's prescribed burn program and has always been willing to lend a hand to other parks in the system that requested additional support. His excellent attitude makes him a pleasure to work with. With 20 years of service, Kenneth G. Coleman. Service from the Law Enforcement Division, David L. Modgling, Game Warden, Mineral Wells, Texas. David Modgling began his career with TPWD as a seasonal worker at Lake Downwood State Park in May of 1992. In July of 1990, he was promoted to Park Ranger 2 at South Llano River State Park and remained there until he entered the Game Warden Academy in October of 1992. Upon graduation from the Game Warden Academy on April the 9th of 1993, David was stationed in Mathis, Texas, San Patricio County. In 1996, he transferred to Pinto County, with 20 years of service, David Modgling.
You've been putting up with Dillard up there in Mineral Wells, hasn't
he? Oh, he's a good guy.
No, I can't say that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
That concludes our retirement and service awards. Next, I want to recognize the Midwest Officer of the Year for Texas. In 1995, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department Law Enforcement Division joined the Association of Midwest Fish and Game Law Enforcement Officers. The association is comprised of 29 member state agencies from the United States and Canada. In July 2006, at the 62nd annual meeting held in Omaha, Nebraska, a Texas game warden was recognized for his outstanding accomplishments with officers from each of the other member states and provinces. The 2006 Texas Officer of the Year, Game Warden Steve Stapleton, has a Bachelor of Science degree in Journalism and Agricultural Science from Texas A&M Commerce and a Bachelor of Science Wildlife Biology degree from Colorado State University. Steve is a devoted family man, married to his high school sweetheart for 13 years and 1 6-year-old son and an 18-month-old daughter. Since graduating from the 42nd Texas Game Warden Training Academy in 2000, Steve has served as a game warden in Van Zandt County for 7 years. During his career with the agency, he has been a leader in public outreach by utilizing all forms of media, including TV, radio, newspapers, and magazines. Steve serves as a guest lecturer several times each semester at Texas A&M University in Commerce. Besides his hunting, fishing, and water safety enforcement in Van Zandt County, where he has seen three tours of duty in Newton County, working Operation Broadhead, the last stronghold for deer hunting with dogs in southeast Texas. In 2005, Steve spent many long, grueling hours involved in the first wave of wardens responding to Hurricane Rita, assisting those in need and maintaining public safety in East Texas. Game Warden Steve Stapleton continues to have a positive impact on regulating the trade of all types of protected wildlife and wildlife parts, where he routinely patrols the Canton First Monday Trades Day, one of the largest trading grounds in the world. This year's recipient strives at being the best by volunteering for new duties and tasks, including taking a Spanish class designed just for peace officers, becoming a certified breath test operator for voting while intoxicated, a background investigator for the Game Warden cadet hiring process, and a Glock pistol armorer and Ruger rifle armorer. At this time, it is my honor and privilege to present to you the 2006 Midwest Game Warden of the Year for Texas, Steve Stapleton.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, next I'm going to call up some folks who we have worked with very, very closely for many, many years and who have been a tremendous partner with us and with everyone in Texas interested in conservation and hunting and fishing and those kinds of outdoor activities. The Sportsman Conservationist of Texas, or SCOT as we refer to them, is closing its doors after 50 years. Scott has been instrumental in preserving the hunting and outdoor heritage and monitoring legislation that impacts all people concerned with conservation in the Lone Star State. The three executive directors, Cecil Woods, Alan Allen, and Jack King, worked tirelessly as partners with our department and with state and local conservation organizations to protect sportsmen's rights. Today, Scott would like to donate its remaining assets to the department to the benefit of youth hunting, fishing, and outdoor education programs. The department plans to use the funds in its school-based programs to carry on Scott's legacy in Texas. We have here with us today two longtime directors of Scott and friends of mine to make presentation, Mr. Tom Martin, Mr. Ed Strayhorn, as well as past president, Alton Mochagumba. Come forward, please.
Thank you.
Well, I have a brief statement, but Mr. Cook stole most of it, and I'm not allowed to speak very much for reasons most of you probably know. But anyway, it is with mixed emotions that the Sportsman's Conservation of Texas, Scott, makes this donation of $20,000 to the Parks and Wildlife Department in our 50th year of existence. It has been decided that Scott should be dissolved. As our last official act, we wish to donate our remaining funds to Texas Parks and Wildlife to be solely dedicated for use by Steve Hall in the new school's youth programs targeting archery, education, hunting education, fishing education, and outdoor skills education. This donation will close our history with the same emphasis that Scott was started with when the Gene Ashby Youth Ranch was established. Primarily, as I understand it, this was done by Scott with the department, and it's really been a successful program. Although not a formal organization any longer, our members and board will be watching with great interest to watch this new youth education program develop with great success. Thank you very much.
Tom, you're not going to make a speech for us,
Deb Young? Well, I might mention that the three of us have contributed over 75 years working with Scott. I started back in 65 when I was teaching school out in San Angelo and was president of the Bass Club. So we go back a long way.
Gentlemen, can I just speak back just a little bit?
Great. Thank you, Alfred. Thank you very much.
Thank you for all y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you. We hope anything we can do to help.
Thank you
for
all your work.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Next, we have a really, really special set of folks that we want to recognize and honor. It is absolutely a pleasure and an honor for me to recognize 9 Parks and Wildlife employees who are currently on duty or have recently returned from active military service. These folks were called away from their families and their jobs to serve their country, and they went willingly and have done a great job. First, Senior Chief Petty Officer Andrew Valdez, stationed in Iraq from February 2004 through November 2004 as a senior enlisted leader for the Medical Department of the 3rd Battalion, 24th Marines, 1st Marine Division. Senior Chief Valdez ensured that the 65 personnel under him were adequately trained to provide medical care to Marines in the battalion. While deployed there, he received the Navy and Marine Corps Commendation Medal, 1st Marine Fleet Marine Force Warfare Designator, Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, Iraqi Campaign Medal, Sea Service Deployment Ribbon, and the Combat Action Ribbon. Andy returned to Texas in January 2005 and is back at his post as game warden in San Patricio County. He retired from the Naval Reserves after 26 years of service. Thank you, Andy, for your service to your country and the people of Texas.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, sir. U.S. Army Major Ken Reagan was deployed to Iraq in September 2004 and returned to the U.S. in September 2005. While in Iraq, Ken was Support Operations Officer to the Army Materiel Command Field Support Battalion. Reagan's unit supported and operated all the add-on armor that protects soldiers from improvised explosive devices and small arms fire, along with missiles and tank ballistic protection systems. As the manager of Mustang Island State Park, Kenny was used to operating in a sandy situation. However, instead of the sound of waves on the beach, each day at Camp Anaconda brought the sound of incoming mortars. Camp Anaconda is popularly known among the folks over there as Martyr Itisville. During his service in Iraq, he received the Army Commendation Medal, the Global War on Terrorism Service Medal, and the Iraqi Campaign Medal. As a young man, Reagan also served in the Vietnam War. Ken, we thank you for your dedication and your service to your country. First Lieutenant James B. Runt began his tour in Iraq in August 2005 as a second lieutenant and platoon leader. By the end of his tour in January 2006, he was a first lieutenant and executive officer of Bravo Company of the 112th Armored Division 56th Brigade Combat Team. His platoon conducted routine clearance missions between Scania and Baghdad. During these combat patrols, his platoon located and destroyed 11 improvised explosive devices and escorted military and civilian convoys over 50,000 miles without any casualties or loss of equipment. RAMPS has been awarded the Bronze Star, the Combat Action Badge, and the Iraqi Campaign Medal. Jim was also called to active duty in July 2002. And served until July of 2003. Game Warden Captain Jim Rapp now served as Division Inspector for the Law Enforcement Division. Jim, again, we thank you for your dedication and your service to your country and to the state of Texas. Jim Rapp. U.S. Navy Intelligence Specialist First Class Jimmydale Shively, returned in March 2005 from a year of active duty at the Joint Intelligence Command Central, with 3 months spent in Baghdad. Shively was a member of the high-value targets team, tracking the location of key insurgent leaders fighting against coalition forces. Some of his awards include Joint Services Achievement Medal, Navy and Marine Corps Achievement Medal, Iraqi Campaign Medal, and the Global War on Terrorism Service Medal. Dale is back at work as coordinator of the Artificial Reef Program in the Coastal Fisheries Division. Dale, thank you for your service to your country and to the people of Texas. Dale Shively.
We looked and looked for Dale this morning and had a hard time finding him.
Thank you.
Thank you. Command Sergeant Major Timothy Spice served for 18 months as the Operations Sergeant at Fort Hood Provost Marshal Office during his second tour of active duty. During this deployment, Tim earned the Meritorious Service Medal, the Army Commendation Medal, and his unit also received the Army Superior Unit Award. Tim Spice returned to his job as the Urban Outdoors Program Coordinator for the Communications Division in August 2004 and was promoted to Command Sergeant Major in January 2006. Thank you, Tim, for your dedication and continued service to the nation and to our outfit. Tim Spice.
Thanks, sir. Old Tim's hard to lose, if you know what I mean. Thank you very much, sir.
Staff Sergeant Shane Detweiler was deployed to Iraq in January 2005 as a counterintelligence special agent on a tactical human intelligence team. His mission included recruiting and exploiting intelligence sources, tactical questioning of Iraqis during raids and cordon and searches in order to determine target identities, gather evidence, and coordinated follow-on targets. His team was responsible for identifying key insurgent group leaders, financiers, Iraqi government supporters, foreign government supporters, weapon catches, improved explosive device and vehicle barn improvised explosive device manufacturing facilities, emplacements of those devices, and high, medium, and low-level insurgents. While on active duty, Staff Sergeant Detweiler was awarded the Bronze Star and the Global War on Terrorism Service Medal. In December 2005, Detweiler returned home to Chambers County and once again became Game Warden Detweiler. Thank you, Shane, for your service and for the sacrifices of your family. Shane Detweiler. Person I want to recognize is not attending today, but his supervisor will accept the award. U.S. Army Sergeant Adrian Edmondson is a programmer 4 in our Information Technology Division. This is his second deployment. He is currently serving with Task Force Houston at Camp Monteith in Kosovo, where his specialized unit works with civilians and local leaders to improve the region's infrastructure. Adrian has been awarded the following medals: the National Defense Ribbon 3 times, Global War on Terrorism Medal, and the Texas Faithful Service Ribbon. Sergeant Edmondson has been in Kosovo since December 2005. His supervisor, Mark Miller, has joined us today to accept this honor on Adrian's behalf. We look forward to congratulating him and seeing him in person when he returns in December. Mark?
bet old Adrian wishes he was here today.
Thanks, Mark.
Also not attending, U.S. Air Force Tech Sergeant Michael Parrish is currently assigned to the 433rd Aircraft Wing Maintenance Support Squadron, Aerospace Ground Equipment Branch at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio. Michael is a mechanic, repairing and inspecting all the ground equipment that is used to repair and inspect aircraft. He has been with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department since August of 2001, where he was an accountant one in the Administrative Resources Division. Tech Sergeant Parrish is looking forward to his return to civilian life next month. Thank you, Michael, for your service to your country and the people of Texas. Coastal Fisheries Fish and Wildlife Technician 2, Craig Colcutt, is known these days as United States Coast Guard Boatswain's Mate First Class Colcutt. That's a long one. Craig is currently the team leader of an anti-terrorism boarding team. He is stationed in Corpus Christi as a tactical coastman to provide security for the outload of military equipment. Craig, we thank you for your continued service to your nation. Craig Colquitt. Ladies and gentlemen, let's ask all of these folks and their families to stand, and let's give them all one big applause. Last in our special recognition today, but certainly not least, the story of what has become the State Parks Division's Community Service, Education, and Outreach Program began over a cup of coffee in the story of the local newspaper about 12 years ago. At that time, Ken Pollard was assigned to the Regional State Parks Headquarters in Abilene as a Regional Maintenance Specialist. After reading an article about the Soldiers in Blue Committee, Ken contacted the Abilene-based group, which helped establish the TPWD Buffalo Soldiers Living History Program. Ken recognized the opportunity to emphasize the contributions of culturally diverse groups to the rich history of Texas, and began blazing trails with 9 uniforms of blue wool and the stories of the Texas frontier, told through the lives of Buffalo soldiers, vaqueros, frontier women, and Native American Indians. He built partnerships with more than 50 organizations and has recruited 600 volunteers to this program. Ken and a small, dedicated group of TPWD employees working together across divisions have reached more than 3 million students and families in Texas. Their inventory has grown from 9 uniforms to over 10,000 items, which serve as a shared resource for kindred outreach and education programs. As a program supervisor for the State Parks Community Service Outreach and Education Program, Ken has worked strategically and diligently to ensure that the legacy of the Black Texas Heroes and other culturally diverse frontier groups endures and is recognized. He has achieved celebrity status as a champion of cultural diversity and pride in contributions by minorities to Texas history. He has been involved in videos, movies, documentaries on the Discovery Channel, TNT, Fox Sports Southwest, and numerous television and radio shows. Through Ken's efforts, the Texas legislature has designated the month of July as Texas Buffalo Soldiers Heritage Month, and has recently established the Texas Buffalo Soldiers Heritage Trail Project. the trail project connecting approximately 70 parks and historic sites along the 1800s military and civilian routes will bring education, tourism, and other social and economic opportunities to minority communities across Texas. Ken Pollard received the 2005 TPWD's Community Outreach Award, as well as the 2005 TPWD Outstanding Team Award and the 2005 Preservation Texas Treasures of Texas Heritage Foundation Heritage Education Award for the Huff Wagon Train and Diary Project. Ken has a long list, almost as long as he is tall, of other awards and certificates of appreciation from distinguished groups all across Texas. The program is the only nationally recognized program of its kind. The Huff Wagon Train and Diary Project involved taking over 150 seventh grade students from California and Texas on the historical route of William P. Huff through Texas, starting in El Paso, traversing southeastern New Mexico to Austin and then to Houston's Glenwood Cemetery to pay respect to Mr. Huff, who the group had come to know through the diary he kept on his journey. Ken, who is the commanding officer and chaplain for the Texas Buffalo Soldiers Regiment, partners with private groups, local governments, and other agencies, and TPWD employees from all divisions to host or sponsor events to demonstrate the shared heritage of Texas. He serves on the cultural program. He serves as the cultural program supervisor for the Cowboys of Color Southwestern Radio Tour, co-authored Black Cowboys of Texas, and serves as an advisor, task force member, and official historian of several notable organizations throughout the state. The Cowboys of Color Radio Tour is an educational and entertaining radio that reaches crowds of thousands in Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, Houston, Fort Worth, and Mesquite. Next Thursday, August the 31st, Ken Pollard will be inducted into the National Cowboys of Color Hall of Fame, along with Charlie Pride and Rosetta Lee Reed, to name a few. In case you have not been to a Buffalo Soldier event, Ms. Reed often portrays Kathy Williams, a.k.a. Williams Kathy, who was a Buffalo Soldier before women were officially allowed to enlist. The National Cowboys of Color Museum and Hall of Fame in Fort Worth acknowledges individuals who have contributed to the Western culture and tradition and play a part in keeping this important piece of American history alive. Please join me in welcoming and recognizing Ken Pollard for his induction into the National Cowboys of Color Hall of Fame and for his personal accomplishments and for the profound benefits that the outreach and education effort have made in the lives of those involved and the lives that have been touched. Ken Pollard.
Thank you, Ken Pollard. Appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen of the audience, thank you. We appreciate you helping us recognize these folks. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. And for those of you who are not regular visitors to our commission meeting, that's not an uncommon example you saw today of the dedication of the employees of this organization. And I think, especially in light of the service and dedication that we honor today for those who are serving their country in the military, certainly puts in perspective what we're going to be doing here today, which is how to meet the mission of this organization to really repay that sacrifice that those employees have made. And I want to thank you again for all you do. Keeping that perspective, we'll move on to our first item, which is the approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion? By Holt. Second. By Holmes. All in favor? Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. On to the first substantive item of the day here, our briefing on state parks. For those of you familiar, you'll know that in February of this year, with the support and encouragement of Governor Perry and his staff, I appointed a state parks advisory committee. We've had state parks advisory committees in the past, but in light of the situation that we've found ourselves in and not being able to meet our mission as stated in our 10-year plan with regard to the parks funding and, as importantly, future park needs and acquisition, I asked a group of people I've worked with over the past 6 years to help us formulate a plan that will get us to that mission. This isn't the first committee report or advisory on this subject. I served on one 6 years ago that pointed out these issues and needs for our state parks. But I think that this group is uniquely qualified. I think I've appointed a very diverse group of folks who have the ability to bring some real focus and clarity to this issue. And with that, if Scott Borff, would you make the introduction, please, for Chairman Murphy?
Yes, sir. For the record, my name is Scott Borff, Deputy Executive Director of Operations. And rather than re-articulate what the chairman just said, I'm going to get right to the business here and introduce Senator John Montfort, the Honorable John Montfort.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for giving us the spot on the agenda this morning. Chairman Fitzsimmons, as has been stated, appointed the State Parks Advisory Committee earlier this year, and in so doing he charged us to study four issues related to Texas parks. First, funding options. Secondly, any existing units of the system that might be operated by more appropriate entities. Third, the role of public-private partnerships in our parks. And lastly, options to secure future needs for state parks and local parks identified in the Texas Parks and Wildlife Land and Conservation Resources and Recreation Plan. We're here today to present to the Commission our recommendations for addressing these important challenges for Texas. Before I do that, Mr. Chairman and members, if you would indulge me, I would like to introduce some of the members of our committee who were able to make it today. We had 15 Texans serving voluntarily on this committee. Well, I presume it was voluntarily. I'm not sure mine was, but anyway. They really donated a lot of personal hours and time at their own expense to this initiative. First of all, if I could ask you to stand, George Bristol, President of the Texas Coalition for Conservation. George has a passion for parks and has really elevated this issue, I think, to its importance in Texas. Beth McDonald from Texans for State Parks. Beth is with us today. Andy Sampson, former Executive Director of Parks and Wildlife and Wildlife Commission and currently Executive Director of the River Systems Institute at Texas State University. Diane Schock, noted conservationist. Diane is with us. David Woodcock, Professor of Architecture at Texas A&M University. Paul Cerf, President of Texas Travel Industry Association. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. For a number of years, our parks in Texas have struggled for funding. In 1993, the legislature established the sporting goods tax as a source of funding for our state parks. This would get us away from using the cigarette taxes, which proved certainly at that part of our evolution both unreliable as a source of funding and unrelated to the recreational purposes of our parks. Over that time period since its enactment of that particular sporting goods tax, over $500 million generated by that tax on sporting goods have been directed to general revenue away from the park system. We believe and hope it is time to change that. The report we are presenting to you today, members of the commission and Mr. Chairman, includes six important recommendations. We know that our first recommendation will probably receive the greatest amount of attention, so I'll probably spend a few minutes talking about that one. We recommend unanimously that the legislature appropriate all revenues generated by the sporting goods sales tax to our state parks while maintaining each of the current revenue streams that are available to us currently. This would represent an increase of approximately $85 million above what was appropriated in 2005, but it would accomplish three critical goals. First, it would provide funding for identified and acute operational equipment and local park grant needs. Secondly, it would establish a 10-year capital program for major repairs and park acquisitions and development. And third, it would adhere to the 10-year land and water resources conservation and recreation plan completed at the direction of the legislature in 2003. These recommendations are also consistent with the needs that Chairman Harvey Hildebrand of the Texas House of Representatives sought to address with House Bill 1292 in 2005. Now, will this objective be easy? The answer is no. The legislature has to balance a number of important priorities, but we believe it is critical that a substantial and sustainable source of revenue be appropriated for our parks. And we believe that Texas public understands this need. Surveys and voter referenda on bonds for parks consistently find public support. People are willing to pay for our parks. And we have significant support from the media. Just consider a few recent examples of editorial and column support. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram and the Cox newspapers have been running a number of editorials and articles in recent months. On August 18th, the Dallas Morning News editorial was published entitled, "With Fun Cap, Life No Picnic for Parks." The Express News in my hometown on July 31st ran an article, "Remove the Revenue Cap, Help Fix Texas Park." The Houston Chronicle on July 30th ran the following column, "Budget Cuts Threaten Low-Performing State Parks." Virtually every major state newspaper, Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, Fort Worth, El Paso, Corpus Christi, Brownwood, Waco, Tyler, and on, has devoted either editorial or prominent column space to supporting our parks. So has every small town newspaper where there is a state park. As we note in our report, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission, the time for action is now. We, as your advisory committee, stand ready to assist you in this important goal for the future of Texas. We thank you for allowing us to work on this project. It's important work for Texas, and we're pleased to present you with this report. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Monfort, and thank you for your hard work and your committee's dedication. I think I've appointed a pretty good chairman and a very, very capable group, and we look forward to your report, and I've enjoyed working with you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
The next item, we have several members, elected members here that would like to comment on the report, and I would like to recognize Some of the, those members have been such great supporters of ours, Senator Todd Staples, Harvey Hildebrand, and I would like to recognize a good friend of mine I saw in the audience earlier, former Parks and Wildlife Commissioner, who's been a very strong supporter and helped to me in our work for state parks, Bob Armstrong. I know Bob, you're back there somewhere, and appointed you recently to serve on one of our other park task force. It's good to see Bob back in the building. Senator Staples?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners, I appreciate your great service to the state of Texas and particularly your leadership in dealing with a very difficult situation I know that we find ourselves in today in regarding the future of our parks. I will assure you that members of the legislature like you do deeply care about the future of our park system. I applaud you for the work of the Montford Advisory Committee to bring recommendations to you and to the legislature. And I think clearly now that other crises in our state have been dealt with over the last few months, it will allow the legislature to focus its attention on the park system. I think the reality is, though, that even though we have heard expressed support from key leaders in the state for increased funding for parks operations, the ability to deliver those dollars will continue to be a struggle in light of our current budget situation. I know, like you and the people of Texas knows, that money has to come from the legislature. But in order to get the legislature to deliver those dollars, I think it's so important that we have a specific plan in place. The Montford Committee goes a long way to laying a firm foundation to make that happen. It's my understanding that the advisory committee that we just heard from does not contemplate the funding needs of capital-intensive items like the Texas State Railroad and the battleship Texas, and I know that is high on our priority list as well. In light of the notice from this agency that the state railroad operations would cease December 31st, 2006, the local community has been working diligently with task force leaders to develop a strategy for the transfer of operations of the Texas State Railroad by year-end in order to not lose this unique park on rails. They have identified credible operators who have shown a strong willingness to operate the Texas State Railroad in order to mitigate the larger than normal operating expenses associated with this type of park. They have proposed creating a larger entertainment venue, and it's been proven throughout the country that having a larger entertainment venue will help reduce the operating losses, and this seems viable. At my request, a few weeks ago, many of my colleagues and I met with Mr. Cook and Mr. Bork, and we appreciate their diligent efforts to find a resolution. We met to express to them where the task force is and what needs to be done from this point forward. And here is what happened. It was determined by your staff that there were significant barriers to finding and procuring a third-party operator or changing title prior to the static display deadline of December 31, 2006. One of the most significant barriers is the logistic of negotiating right-of-ways with approximately 100 landowners who have property bordering the tracks. If the state railroad were to change hands, many contracts could be void. Similarly, we have been told by your staff that many of these agreements are valid only if it is an operational train. Therefore, creating a static display would nullify these agreements and forever remove the opportunity to have a unique park on rails like we have. There are many other examples of obstacles, but I think you get the picture. As a result of this meeting, Mr. Cook sent a letter to Governor Dewhurst and to Speaker Craddock outlining these difficulties that have been identified and requesting supplemental funding for 07 in order to ensure a seamless transition. As we see it, the only options that are on the table realistically at this point is for the Texas State Railroad to become a static display, which would be a dismal thing to happen, or the other option is realistically full funding to the tune of $50 million in order to meet the projected needs. And I, like you, have great reservations in understanding that that $50 million price tag could be met in light of the other identified needs in this state. So So we're asking for four specific items from you as commissioners and from the Parks Agency that we think are necessary in order to make this happen. The first one is to develop a timeline of the options for the legislature to consider. Right now we have an all or nothing proposal, and I don't think either one of those are going to satisfy the needs of Texans. Number two, continue the RFP process that is currently underway. Our concern with the RFP process, though, is that this, the length of timeline to implement it. How can this agency ensure to the legislature that a more efficient operating system is on the way and meet the year-end deadline that we have? This is a hurdle that must be overcome, and we would also ask you to consider a contracting with a specific operator outside of the RFP process if the timeline cannot be met to get our $650,000drained. Number three, create a task force similar to what was just done to provide funding options for the capital intensive assets such as the Texas State Railroad and the Battleship Texas. Now we know the sales tax on sporting goods obviously is going to be the funding source, but that's being used elsewhere, and the legislature is going to have to supplement that somehow. This agency brought to my attention a couple of sessions ago the need to build a new fish hatchery because the old one was out of date. With your help and the anglers of Texas, the legislature passed a bill because we had a tangible plan in place to add a fish stamp to generate the revenue to build this new fish hatchery that the groundbreaking on just occurred, I think, last week. We need a similar tangible plan for a funding source for these capital-intensive items for our state, and we need this agency to bring those options to the legislature for their consideration. We are concerned that the legislative leadership will be reluctant to grant the funding request of $650,000 for the next year unless a realistic operating plan is designed and in place and tangible and on the table. Our fourth request is to create a transition plan for the Texas State Railroad similar to what was done with the Admiral Nimitz Museum. We think this is in line with recommendation number four from Chairman Montfort that he just presented. Keep in mind, this transfer was about $11 million, as I recall, something that was approved by the legislature and this agency. And I think in order for the leadership to provide the dollars that are needed for a transition plan for the Texas State Railroad, something that is much bigger in size and scope than the Nimitz, that we must have that plan in place. We appreciate your leadership. We have been fulfilling our request and conversations that I've had with many of you to develop a plan. Obstacles have been identified in the transfer by your personnel, and we look forward to working with you on these four specific requests to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you, Senator, and thanks for your tireless support of our mission and our department. You've always been there to help us, and I appreciate that. I think it's important to point out for those in the audience who are not as familiar with these issues, maybe as others, is the charges that I gave the Montfort advisory group did not include the battleship and the railroad for the reason you point out, Senator, that these are capital-intensive special projects that really require special attention. That you really would not be correct to lump it in with our traditional state parks outdoor venues. And I'd instruct the staff to continue to work with you and your staff. I know we've got a task force in place now. If I need to do something additional in appointing folks to that task force, I'll do so. But I'd instruct Bob and the staff to continue to work with you and your staff to address those issues you pointed out. I know some of these other commissioners have worked on this issue. You have any questions for the Senator or comments, Ned?
Senator, I appreciate all the hard work you've put in on behalf of the Texas State Railroad and Parks and Wildlife. We were involved in the Nimitz transfer, of course, and I think that's a pretty good template, and I would encourage you to continue to look for support groups that are similar to that Nimitz Foundation operation.
Because I think that could be a big help. I know you've been working on that.
And I think that's...
For some time now.
We have been, and I think that's the model that's being pursued. I think the lead time in the legislative action that was necessary for the Nimitz has been a longer length of time than the local task force has had to develop this plan for the Texas State Railroad, and there are many more legal impediments to making that occur. And so we are committed. I don't want to allow this commission to have any other concept, but the local task force is committed to total partnership with Parks Agency to making this work. But the lead time into making that happen from the legal background and research has created an obstacle. We know if it goes static that it truly, it will just almost make it an irreversible decision to make it an operational train again, and that's why the 650 is so critical for next season.
To rephrase that, would foreclose other options.
That's correct.
Right. All right.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Senator.
Thank
you. Appreciate your leadership.
Thank all of you. Appreciate it.
Chairman Hildebrand?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. It's a pleasure to be here this morning, and I just want to congratulate you, Mr. Chairman, for appointing the committee and commend the committee, the Marketing Committee, and all the members for the fine job they've done. In particular, I welcome all the recommendations, but in particular, I like the thrust and welcome the... We're finishing the job we started in 1993 about making this more a user-based funding system. And that's what I think this recommendation, if you really look at it, there's some things that we've talked about before, some things that were included in legislation in the past. I'll comment on those things. But really, it's drawing a lot of public attention. It's going to help our cause, and we're going to get the job accomplished largely because of the public attention and focus that's been generated by this most recent efforts. But also the whole idea that this needs to be a user-based system, and this helps us move towards realizing that really important goal. So I really welcome the report. I welcome the support that I'm seeing that we're gaining in the legislature. For some time now, I like to point out, probably since your August meeting last year, some things occurred in that meeting, and there was a lot of public attention on other things on your agenda that day that tended to bring the public more into increased public interest in this whole issue. And since then, the work that you've done here, the committee, the work we've continued in the legislature and our committee, I think has brought us to where we are now, where it's an exciting day because we have a report that's workable, that's something that we can all embrace and work on to turn into a legislative proposal, that we have a really promising opportunity to pass legislation to bring this about and bring this into reality. I, as you know, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, and I know since January of 2003 when I became Chairman of the Committee on Cultural Recreation and Tourism, which has oversight responsibilities for the Parks and Wildlife Commission and the Department, we have been working on this issue. George Bristol, who's the Vice Chairman, along with, and I want to say this, I'm old friends for a number of reasons with Chairman Mopper. I enjoyed working with him in the Senate when he was in the Senate and I was in the House, but we worked together on a lot of issues in the legislature but outside the legislature too. And I think you couldn't have picked a better person to lead the advisory committee. And George Bristol, the Vice Chairman on the committee, was the first person to bring this issue to my attention and to get me to focus on it in a way that we could start identifying the things that we needed to do that led eventually to a bill that we were going to do last session. But in 2003, when I became chairman, we immediately started looking at the whole issue of preserving resources and then increasing or hoping to increase recreational opportunities for Texans. You know that Texans, all Texans, have a fierce native pride and also have a fierce tie to the land. Regardless of whether they're landowners or not, it's just a part of being the character of a Texan that you care about the land and you want to be close to the land. We have to, in this state, increase the opportunities for everyday Texans to have that opportunity to enjoy the natural resources of the state, to help preserve and conserve those resources, but to enjoy those in recreational activities. Just as your billboards and your advertising that this agency has promoted in the last few years, it's just better in the outdoors. And so I appreciate the job that you've done. I look forward to taking these recommendations. We, as you know, last legislative session, some of the recommendations were in our bill that was mentioned by Senator Marper. We plan to introduce a bill during the pre-filing session in November, and we are going to convert many of these recommendations into that bill, and we look forward to working with you, the commissioners, and the advisory committee to get that job done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for all your support and leadership and helping us with our mission. You've been a tireless advocate for the department and our mission. Thank you very much. I think all of us recognize your leadership and recognize that we've been at this a while and you've been there with us shoulder to shoulder. Thank you.
Let's get the job done.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'd ask at this time if Chairman Monford and Vice Chairman Bristol would come forward because we have a few, I know the commissioners have a few questions on that, on the details here of your report. Chairman Monford, the charge that I gave you sort of broke the challenge into two pieces, current needs, which I think are well known, and maybe what's not as well known, the future needs. You've heard me on this subject before, and I've communicated with your committee by letter and in person. I do not want focus to be lost on the future needs of Texas for state parks. It's not enough to just address our current needs. We're a growing state, and I think as, and George, I hope you'll expand on this. These parks return more to us as a state than the cost, and that's an important message I think in the report. And I'd ask the two of you to sort of describe how your recommendations address those two issues, current and future.
Well, as you know, Mr. Chairman, members, my name is George Bristol. I'm president of the Texas Coalition for Conservation. In late 2002, going into 2003, the coalition commissioned a report on 40 parks and their economic impact to the state of Texas and their local communities. That was expanded to 80 parks. In every instance, those parks, when you add in the money spent in the local communities at grocery stores and motels and service stations, et cetera, more than paid for themselves. First of all, parks never were meant to make money. They were our common gifts to ourselves for the benefit of the citizens. The mere fact that Pat Neff and Teddy Roosevelt at the national level said parks have an economic benefit and a tourist benefit flowed into the deal. And that was Pat Neff's entire argument with this new thing called an automobile and a new thing called roads, getting people to stay in Texas and spend their money in Texas rather than go out of state on vacations and tourism. Every single park, and if you haven't read that study, pick a park, adds benefit to the local economy and to the state of Texas. Furthermore, of the 28 reasons in a tourism study a couple of years ago, 13 reasons people come out of state to Texas are identified with our state park system.
George gets pretty evangelical about parks, so let me just say
that's why I appointed him.
As a practical matter, I think the committee, when we digested all of this information, we feel like this is, you know, removal of the cap is a good investment for Texas. You've got 10 million people a year visiting these parks. You all know or are familiar with the economic indices and the turnover factor, but this is serious business and it's serious investment for Texas. So we want to key on that theme, that in lifting this cap and getting us this additional revenue, not as much of an expenditure as it is an investment for the future of Texas, because you've got 10 million people a year visiting these parks. So it's important, and I think we will carry that message forward with your direction, that this is in reality a good investment for Texas.
Would you, Tim Mumford, just address briefly some of the specifics as to your recommendation between that issue of current and future needs, and maybe a good example of that would be your recommendations with regard to acquisition of needed parks and some of the current needs we have there, plus future.
Be glad to. I think in the report, first of all, I want to underscore, and I really appreciate the commission's support in giving us really the staff of the commission and giving us some really good numbers, and we correlated those with your legislative appropriation requests. We think we've got good defensible numbers in this report, but I think it is important to note a couple of things that. We have voter-approved bonds that have been approved by the voters and yet have not all been allocated or expended. That would be a current source of money that we could tap. But I think the important thing to remember is we have found that these are manageable numbers, but if you will invest, if we can get a regular investment pattern here going, with the growth projections of Texas, we believe we've got to acquire some additional parks. And the expenditure factors are inversely proportional to the passage of time. If we get them now, it'll cost us a certain amount of money. But if we continue to push back new acquisitions and wait, they're going to compound in their costs. So we believe that with this plan, with the roughly $85 million in additional infusion that we can count on, and you in allocating your budget and in your appropriations in terms of how you allocate those, we believe you could pace a pretty good comprehensive acquisition program. Now, we sort of detailed it with a 10-year window, Mr. Chairman. I know you told me personally you'd like for it to be projected forever, and we certainly agreed with that position, but in terms of practicality and giving the legislature and giving Chairman Hildebrand and Senator Staples, soon to be Ag Commissioner, I guess, a plan to work with, we felt like measuring it with a 10-year window with the normal bonding procedures plus what you already had would be a good index to get the job done.
Well, and I think that's consistent with, although a few years into the 10-year Land and Water Conservation Plan already, certainly consistent right. with that. So my charge with regard to the goals, the missions that are set out in the Land and Water Conservation Plan, we believe your recommendations give us a roadmap to achieve the park portion of that. Of
yes,
that
sir, I do. It was tempting to stray, but I believe we stayed on point. We focused on that 10-year plan because it was mandated, and I think this report is compatible with that 10-year plan.
Thank you. Any of the other commissioners have any questions regarding the recommendations of the report?
Well, I wanted to thank John and George, particularly both of you, for helping with this. And I was glad you put a little bit of focus on Government Canyon State Natural Area in San Antonio, which obviously is dear to my heart. It seems to me that one of the ways we're going to try to have to get our legislature to come aboard is to appeal to the urban areas and the legislators and those constituents. Could you address that for a moment? I mean, how do we go about that? I assume George and John, you've thought about that.
There are two ways, Commissioner Holt. Number one, these public-private partnerships, I think, are the poster child for the future. You have identified in your land and water resources plan at least four parks of 5,000 acres that are an hour and a half from the urban areas. Try to get the next wave of parks closer in to the urban areas. But that's not to say that if we can get the city of San Antonio and Bear, or the city of Dallas and Dallas County and Fort Worth to join in as they did with Government Canyon, that we can't kill two or three birds with one stone. So we addressed that, and that's specifically why we put Government Canyon in the report, that it just doesn't necessarily follow that we have to have all the money from one agency to do it if we can get a partnership together to accomplish the same goal.
I really do commend you for pointing that out, because a lot of different entities benefit from these parks. And for those not familiar with Government Canyon, what we did there, and Andy, I would welcome, you know, your comments on this, because you were there in putting that together. But we brought together entities that had different reasons to benefit from that open space. San Antonio Water System, the Edwards Aquifer Authority, of course, private donors who were interested in seeing that happen. And so if I'm understanding the recommendation correctly, we need to continue those sort of projects as a template.
Absolutely.
All right. Any other? Commissioner Parker?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Assistant Chairman, I really appreciate your personal commitment to this project. It really demonstrates your committee's unyielding commitment. And the Government Canyon Park is a classic example, and I want to point out that it was not only a project of Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and the city and county groups of San Antonio that came together, and I want to point out that it was also a classic example of what we need to pursue in the future of getting local business entities and statewide entities. I want to have on the record that the great cooperation there at Government Canyon with the San Antonio Builders and the Corpus Christi Builders, both associations furnished houses for our park director and assistant park director. And it is, I think that we should pursue those business groups that can come together and help us with projects like Government Canyon.
Commissioner Partner, I'd like to add another former commissioner. If it weren't for Tim Hickson and his passion,
absolutely,
from the beginning, this never would have gotten done.
Here, here, here.
Yeah.
Commissioner Montgomery?
Yes, very briefly, thank you all for your service. We appreciate it, and we certainly recognize the need. I chair the Conservation Committee. If I could just add, both for the chairman and for you all, a sense of urgency. We have a state in which land prices are rapidly escalating, and I do think, while it's easy to cry wolf, you're not crying wolf. There are opportunities out there to acquire significant properties that are perfect for the park system to serve the over half the state's population living in the urban areas, and the fastest growing segment of the state's population is in those urban areas, that we will miss literally between these legislative cycles if we don't act. So the urgency is real, the opportunities are real, the need is there, and it's only going to get larger and less well served if we don't act now. So thank you all for calling the attention of the public to this. And Mr. Chairman, it's a real issue, and we really appreciate your leadership on this too, and the time to act really is now. Thank you.
I'm going to ask you a question it's pointed, but we brought up the issue of templates. We've made some very specific recommendations here. I ask you also to look at the local parks grant program, which I think is very important. It's an integral part of our mission. And we've made some specific recommendations there for full funding of the local parks grant program. Based on your recommendations, George, and I've asked you, George, recently, I've asked you to serve on a small task force working on Eagle Mountain Lake in Fort Worth to get that established as a local park so that we can then pursue our mission of a larger, as you point out, 5,000-acre larger park in the area. Is what we're doing there consistent with that recommendation? And if we had the local parks grant component available for Eagle Mountain Lake as a local park? Would that make that template work any better?
It would to a certain extent. I think the main question is that over the years, you have always been underfunded. You haven't had enough to do things like develop Eagle Mountain Lake. It just sat there. And then it became excess property. But the local parks grant money. And even though we say raise it from the 15.5 to 25 million, if you think state parks are good an investment, that 25 million is the best leverage money that this agency and this state can spend to generate, because the local parks have to come up with a plan, they have this competitive competition, and you only get the best, and then they have to run it when it's over. So I hope that we will do it, but yes, find other ways, all the ways that we can, to make these things mesh together so it's a seamless system from the local park, state park, all the way to the national park.
So bringing together the county, the regional water district, the Trust for Public Land, the Nature Conservancy, what we've done there on Eagle Mountain Lake, that's consistent with that template we showed at Governor King. All right. Just want to make sure we're following the recommendations already. Yes.
I'd like to just add my thanks, Senator Monford, George, all the members of the committee. I know that you spent a great deal of time and looked at this very carefully and made thoughtful recommendations. I would like to just touch on the sense of urgency about this issue. If Chairman Hildebrand's bill of 2 years ago in the last session had passed, we wouldn't be here now in this situation. And quite frankly, if this session doesn't address this in a meaningful way, we're already in dire straits in some of our parks, and some of the physical condition of the facilities is tragic, and it will be nothing but worse if it is not addressed in this session. And it's going to take the hard work of quite a lot of people to help this bill pass. And we really appreciate the time and effort and the attention that you have put to it and the recommendation that you've made. We now have the game plan, and we need to carry it out. We thank you very much.
Well, Commissioner Holmes, I would point out that you and I spent, I think it was 4 hours in the Lieutenant Governor's office already working on this, and we think with the partnership, obviously we will heed to your recommendations and decision, but I think you've got a committee here that's, as I mentioned, ready and willing to go to work and help get the job done.
You're by no means disbanded, Mister.
I don't know
what you're trying to do here.
The Board of Commissioners knowledge, we voted unanimously to submit the report and unanimously to continue to work to advocate and lobby this thing to the legislature. And we're going to meet again this fall with Clyde Alexander, will head up our committee, John, and try every way we can and bring in a lot of other groups to help. Paul Surf's already been working on that. So we have not disbanded.
My advisory committee stays as long as I've appointed them, so you're not going anywhere. You're staying until we're have another issue for you. if I may, Chairman Monford, I'd invite any member of your committee who's here today, if they have anything to add or special comments they'd like to make, I'd welcome those before we...
I noticed a long-time Austin regular, Hector Gutierrez, has arrived. Also, Hector...
Hector, thank you for your service.
The committee was really a great group of Texans. They spent a lot of their own money and their own time, and like I said, we're ready to go to work and get the job done.
Any other comments or questions for Chairman Monford? Chairman Monford, I think the commission's unanimous in their approval of your report. It's what we asked for. It gives us what we need to get the job done. With your help, I'm going to instruct the staff to incorporate these recommendations in our internal documents, I believe, have already been reflected in the LAR submitted, but I'm sure that there will be more documents and more discussion with leadership. And unless I have any objection from any of the commissioners, it would be accepted in toto and incorporated in this department's internal communications and external communications with leadership. Commissioner Parker.
For the record, I would like to make a motion that we adopt the plan, thanking them for their work, and adopt it hopefully unanimously. And I make that motion.
Well, I think we are unanimous. Any objection? No objection. We are unanimous in accepting the report, and as I say, I've instructed the staff to incorporate it, and I look forward to your continued work on this issue, because, George, as you know, we've got a long way to go to make it a reality. But thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We will pick up on the.
I don't need those.
We're going to pick up on agenda item number 3.
Cool. Wait.
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, we'll wait just a minute to let the room clear. Okay, we still have a quorum here. Everybody would manage their breaks accordingly. We appreciate it. We pick up on agenda item number 3, Tim Hogsett, Small Community Grant Funding. Tim, you have a presentation.
Mr. Vice Chairman, members of the Commission, I'm Tim Hogsett, Director of the Recreation Grants Program in the State Parks Division. This is our annual presentation of recommendations for grants from the Small Communities Program. Small communities are classified as communities of under 20,000 in population, and these are matching grants of up to $50,000 in match. Can make quite a difference in a small community. For our annual review, we received 25 applications requesting $1.2 million in matching funds. The applications were rank ordered and by their scores after we used your adopted priority ranking system. And we're here today to recommend the funding of the top 15 grants in the amount of $750,000. I don't need to reiterate this point that the funding for this program has been severely cut back, but I do want to point out that in spite of that, we've tried to maintain a commitment of a large amount of money to these small community grants because of the importance that we think they play. Our recommendation for you this morning is funding for projects listed in Exhibit A in the amount of $750,000 be approved. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions or discussion for Tim? Well, we've got questions first from the audience. Okay, we're going to hear from those signed up to speak. I first got Mike Hendricks. Mike, you're the only one. Do we have anybody else on item number 3? Just one.
Yes, sir.
Nice to see you.
Representing the city of Luling and our Zedler Mill, we would hope to get your help in our Zedler Mill and our first inland paddling trail, and would appreciate anything you might do for us.
We're proud to have that first trail in Luling.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you for coming. Anybody else on number 3? That's all I've got here. Okay, do we have a motion? Commissioner Holmes, second from Commissioner Holt. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Number 4, Special Appropriation Indoor Recreation Grant Funding, Tim Hogsett.
Again, for the record, I'm Tim Hogsett, Director of Recreation Grants Program in the State Parks Division. In the past session of the legislature, a special appropriation was mandated in the amount of $1 million for the city of South Padre Island for the development of the South Padre Island wing of the World Burning Center. Specifically, the Appropriations Act for this agency says funds appropriated from Texas Recreation and Parks account to Texas Parks and Wildlife Department shall allocate up to $1 million of matching funds for the South Padre Island Burning and Nature Center construction. We've gotten the required materials to be able to move forward with this project. They're proposing a 4,500 square foot building that is on the immediately adjacent to Laguna Madre on the north end of the city of South Padre Island on a 7.5 acre site. The facility would be an indoor interpretive center and nature education facility. It'll have approximately 4,500 square feet of exhibit space. We'll also include a 60-foot-high wildlife observation tower. Because of the special appropriation, this project is not required to compete with other projects for funding. Therefore, we're recommending that you adopt the following motion: funding for the city of South Padre Island for development of the South Padre Island Burning and Nature Center in the amount of $1 million is approved. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any discussions or questions for Tim? We have a motion. Motion from Commissioner Bivens. Second from Holt. All in favor, aye. Aye. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Item number five. Tim, National Recreational Trail Grant Funding.
This is our annual review of applications for the National Recreation Trails Grant Program. These are 80% matching grants. They are federal funds that are passed through to the state of Texas. The basis of these are funds are gasoline taxes on off-road vehicle use. For our annual deadline, we received 69 applications requesting approximately $7.5 million. This program does require a state trail advisory board be appointed, and that advisory board make recommendations for funding. They have reviewed these applications and have assessed them on their quality, cost effectiveness, and recreation opportunity impact, and are recommending funding for 41 of those projects. I know that yesterday during the public hearing that you heard opposition from a landowner for one of these projects, that being the off-road vehicle project in Childress. So I'd like to give you a little more information, as I think that individual is here to testify today. I'd like to give you a little more information on that particular project, if I may. It would be for the purchase of 583 acres, approximately 7 miles northwest of the city of Childress. It is an application from the city of Childress and has the unanimous support of the city council, city leaders in Childress. It would be a combination off-road vehicle and motorcycle venue. We would have approximately 15 miles of trails and also a circular motocross kind of track. The site is bounded on the north by a railroad and on the south by US 287. You've just been given a handout that shows the layout of the project. The first page actually shows in a little box in the upper left-hand corner, or right-hand corner, I believe it is, shows the layout of the property and the proposed facilities. And then the second page, there is an orange, light orange triangle. That particular piece of property is a piece of property that would not be purchased and does belong to a person who has approximately a section of land on that partially on that side of the highway, about 250 acres, and then the remaining amount on the other side of the highway. Actually, it's on the north side, I guess it is. There have been two public hearings held in Childress, one back in May by the city, and then we as staff conducted a second one in August. There was one person voicing, or actually two neighboring landowners voicing opposition. Since then, one of them has withdrawn their opposition, our understanding is. There are also a unanimous resolution on file from Childress, from the county, also supporting this project. It is a willing seller, And we, as we always do, will be more than happy to try to work with this adjacent landowner to minimize impact on his property. Given that, I'd be glad to answer any questions on that project. The City of Childress is represented today, and their city manager, I think, will be speaking to you. We propose for the Recreation Trails Program the recommendation that funding for 41 projects in the amount of $3,288,002 is approved, as shown in the recommendations of Exhibit A. I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions for Tim? Tim.
You referenced the landowner referenced an impact on Baylor Creek. We've obviously thought through that. Can you just speak to that briefly?
Well, we will do a complete resource assessment and require the city to do a complete resource assessment of all the natural and possible cultural resources, if there are any, and do everything possible to try to minimize the impact of any runoff or any other. That's basically a wet weather creek. Most of the time it is dry.
Commissioner Holmes?
Tim, it is kind of an unusual layout in that it wraps around this triangular piece. Mm-hmm. Did that cause any consternation in the committee?
Not really, because of the layout of the proposed trail. It's going to be a trail that basically traverses the entire site, and there will be a little piece of that that goes through that piece just above the triangle. But as far as the city is concerned and we're concerned, it's really not going to hamper the recreation opportunity.
Tim, just one question. Do you think there was ever any approach to that landowner? I'm going to ask him if he's coming up again today to have his parcel as part of that.
There's been some discussion of that, but I think I would leave that question to the city and the landowner.
Okay. I'll ask them. Thanks, Tim.
Tim, could I ask one other on the motocross track section? Is there going to be any sort of noise abatement fencing or something to that nature to try to keep the noise down in that area?
We will ask the city to look at that if that indeed becomes an issue. I believe it's far enough away. There are no houses. Really, the only thing out in this area are the highway and the railroad. So other than possible wildlife impact, we really don't see much of an impact of noise. But we will. Of course, there are on those kinds of vehicles noise restrictors as well.
And I also was under the impression that there was some kind of agreement that was going to be, I guess, mutually agreed upon that during deer season, the access to this area would be limited somewhat.
Is that the case, Andy?
Yeah, I'd love to address.
Okay, I can't really give you an answer to that. I'd like the city to address that if they could.
All right. Thank you.
One last question. Tim, it looks like on that triangular track that the long side of the triangle is on a public road.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Highway 287. That's the southern boundary of the property, and then the railroad is the northern boundary.
Other questions from the commissioners? Okay, we've got one speaker, although it sounds like the city may want to speak also, but to William Nixon, we've got, is anybody else on this item number five here? You may need to, if you all could come. Okay, here we go. Excuse me, I wouldn't read my sheets. We got several speakers.
You have one of these that I handed out yesterday. I gave everybody one, but I don't know if it, okay. I just want to voice my opinion and opposition. I am the landowner in the center of that, and I truly believe that anybody on the board or anybody in this room that own that piece of land would feel as I do. I'm just going to give a quick overview. I am William Nixon. I live in Kaufman County. I don't live in Childress County, but my ranch is in Childress County. I leased that place for 3 years, and it came up for sale, and I was able to buy it. I'd like to note that I still owe 17 years on that piece of property. And the ATV park, I've got this sheet and I did it to scale. That's only, the application says 15 miles the first year and up to 25 miles of trail. Well, as you can tell, there's not going to be much else on that piece of property other than trails. I'm just going to kind of read wildlife issues. I just kind of jotted this stuff down. My piece of land lies between Childress Lake and Baylor Lake, north of the Red River. I've worked for 6 years to improve and preserve its habitat. I've dug 2 ponds on the property. The property of the proposed ATV park and my property are the only permanent water sources on Baylor Creek from the Red River to Lake Childress and Baylor Lake. What I mean by that is there is one windmill that's on the piece of property just across the fence from me that will be in the ATV park. I have permanent water hooked up to city water. That's the really only permanent water from the Red River all the way to Baylor Lake and Childress Lake. I believe that whenever these ATVs, even if they are gone some of the time, hunting season for me starts September 1st and ends about mid-February, and then it opens up again in the spring for turkey season. There are also several turkey roosts that are on this piece of land they're going to buy. There are several good draws that aren't actually right on Baylor Creek, but branch off the creek that are on the property. The turkeys roost there, they come to my place to feed, and there's no doubt that ATV activity anytime is going to run the turkeys off and they won't come back. I mean, and that's a good part of my income. There are also lots of deer. Quail are there. There's not a lot of quail left in Texas. And the horned toad that's on the threatened endangered list are there. I haven't seen those since I was a kid. I live in Crawford County. Erosion issues. The proposed ATV park is only 583 acres. The plan for the first year is to build 15 miles of trails and eventually peak at 25 miles of trails and 2 tracks. Baylor Creek lies in the middle of this ranch as well as mine. Please refer to the map showing the density of the trails in the area of land. That's the map I was talking about. With the kind of activity in an ATV park, the erosion will be surmountable. This will carry over to my ranch and other properties. There has already been issues with the railroad trestle on the property and erosion issues. Furthermore, an online article by Western Resource Advocates about motorized recreation states, ORBs, have become one of the greatest threats to America's public lands. They destroy habitat, damage riparian areas, degrade water quality, pollute the air, and disturb both wildlife and humans who prefer quiet in the outdoors. This danger exists for private lands also, and special care should be taken before approving designated areas for ATV parks. Property value issues. As previously stated, I farm the ranch for a living, not as a hobby, as well as hunt the properties that I own in Kaufman County. Our family owned in Kaufman County, and I actually own this one on my own in Childress County. Without the hunting services, I can't pay for this property, and I have 17 years left to pay for it. The loss of wildlife here will cause me to fall short of that. I have consulted with Smith Realty and Childress about the value of my property and was made aware of the devastating effect that the ATV park will have on it. It will devaluate my property by 30 to 40%. And I just, with all these facts, I would lie. I've got a letter from a real estate company. I have this. Can I show you all that?
Yeah, we are limited to 3 minutes, so I know it's important to you, but let's, if you could summarize, please.
This is my property here. All this is the highest property. This is my property that sticks in here. Yeah. This ridge right here is the highest ridge in this park. Whenever I'm on this part of the land, I can see the whole, all the way to the railroad track, all the way this way, and all the way back that way. So it's not, I keep hearing that they say that they'll monitor it, but there's no way to monitor it. This, Andy, I got in out there Friday after the meeting on Thursday. This point from the corner of my place all the way across to here, the property line is only 250 yards. There's no way to have a barrier like that.
You know, what I look at this track, the trying to see. I'm wondering how you effectively deer hunt on that with that much road frontage in your boundary.
To be honest with you, the highway makes the deer hunt all over. They have been raised there. Same with the turkey.
Would you mind speaking in the microphone so we can get on the record? Yeah. Let's go ahead. Commissioner Holmes has a question. We saw the map. Go ahead.
All the game, they've been raised in that. I mean, the railroad's always been there. The highway has always been there. But whenever you go to ATV, I promise you, anytime an ATV goes down that draw, the deer eventually may get used to it. They might do it. It's going to take a long time. But today is what I'm worried about because I have to pay for it today. I can't wait and see if it's going to work. And there's just no way they're going to stay there. One ATV down the draw, everything's flushed out. Yeah, they may come back. Yeah, they may not. But the turkeys will not. I mean, that's... Anybody that knows anything about turkeys, they will not stay with that kind of activity around. Even if it's just 2 or 3 months out of the year, they're going to leave that roost and go elsewhere.
Do we have any more questions for Mr. Nixon?
Yeah, I have one that I brought up a little earlier. Have you been involved in any negotiations with them about buying your property? Or?
It's been mentioned.
Okay.
The only thing there, and like I say, I'm more concerned about the wildlife and the environmental issues, but if it came to that, I would have to sell it to them. But I can't just sell them that one piece. They'll have to buy it all. That's the only permanent water I have for my ranch.
Well,
it's on that side of the road.
I thought you said you could get the city water.
No, well, I'm on city water, but it's on this side of the highway.
Oh, okay.
On 287.
But is that coming out of Childress?
Yes. Well, I really don't know where it's
at,
but it's the main water line that comes through there.
Run.
There's no other water other than that that stays all the time that whole draw. And I'm not disputing that they may need a park there in the general area, but I truly believe this is not the place, and I believe anybody that owned it and put themselves in my shoes would feel the same way.
Good. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Nixon?
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. We've got Jerry Cummins and then Bobby Sanders after him.
Commissioner Frankie, I'm Jerry Cummins. I'm the city manager there in Childress. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today and visit with you. Also appreciate what Parks and Wildlife has done for us in the past. I'm going to take about 30 seconds of my 3 minutes and tell you that we've been here before. We've had projects with Parks and Wildlife before, had recreational grant projects. And those things allow us as small rural communities to do things that otherwise we could not do. Without your help, we couldn't do it. We appreciate it. And I just wanted to mention that. We have been able to develop recreational areas and venues and enhance the quality of life issues for not only citizens of Childress, but the surrounding area and a region as well. We have built many different recreational venues there with your help. These activities also contribute to our economic well-being. It's one of the better things that we can do. It brings people to town. And with our ATV park application that's before you now, we know that we've got a neighbor that opposes the project, and I'm going to be the first one to tell you he's a good man. But we don't have any issue with Mr. Nixon. We think he's a fine fellow. The other gentleman, the landowner that had opposed this, he's a good man too. I think he has maybe changed his opinion on what we're going to do now. But these are good folks, and they have good issues, and we understand their concerns. We know that. We want to assure both the landowners adjacent to this property and the commission that we will do everything that we can to make this as positive a project as we can for everyone. We want to be good neighbors. We want to work together, and we want to solve the problems that exist now and that may arise in the future. But we want to do it together, and we want to have the best relationship that we can. It was mentioned earlier that we do have the support from the local governing bodies, both the City Council and the Commissioner's Court. The Recreation Grants Review Committee has recommended funding the project, and we've just asked that you concur with that and fund the project. That's all I've got. I'd be happy to try to answer any question that you might have.
Any questions from the commission?
I guess I'll ask the same question of you from the other side. Has there been any attempt to negotiate with Mr. Nixon relative to his property? And can you walk me through that a little bit?
We have not had a set-down negotiation.
Okay.
Mr. Nixon does not want to sell his property. We understand that. We don't want to buy it. We hope that we can work it out, that he keeps his place and everything goes on as is, and it's a positive relationship for both of us.
if it did came to pass that he felt like he needed to sell the property and Parks and Wildlife was willing to partner with us again on the purchase of that, then we'd sure be happy to entertain that.
I have a similar question, that is there the opportunity, Tim, you may know, or Mr. City Manager, you might know, to take time till our November meeting to explore whether there's some way to deal with some of the mitigation, some of the issues he's raising. I would like to support this. I think we need these, and I understand the impact it will have on Childress. Are there more avenues we might explore there to help mitigate some of those?
As far as the environmental issues that were brought up? Or the an environmental review will have to be done. That's required, I think, part of all Parks and Wildlife projects. So that'll be there. We may have to do an archaeological site study as well. And that's really normal. You have to do those things, and we'll do that, and cross your fingers that there's nothing there.
You do?
Go ahead.
What I was going to ask Tim was, is Parks and Wildlife, do they do it mitigated? I know it's on the property that's roof funding or the federal government's funding, but does it also take into consideration properties that are adjoining it, for example, Mr. Nixon's property?
We will, particularly if there are natural resources involved that coexist between two pieces of property. But as the city manager said, before we can authorize the city to begin any construction, we will have to do all necessary environmental clearances, possibly cultural resource clearances. And if there become obstacles that we simply can't work around, then we will have to rethink the commitment to the project. And I think the city understands that as well. We don't anticipate that. I think this is a very similar situation to what we faced in Ozona a few months ago. And we're going to endeavor to have the same kind of relationship with the city and with the adjacent landowner and all work together on a development plan and a use plan. Hopefully to everybody's benefit.
Thank you, Tim. The obvious one to me there would be purchase that portion but leave the water rights, so he's got water under the tract. I don't know if that's been explored, and certainly it's his land to buy or sell or hold, but that's the obvious one to me. Do we have latitude to grant if there was some agreement on that matter?
We could potentially consider additional grant funds for additional land acquisition if it made sense.
Okay.
Yeah, Tim, before you move away from the mic, help me a little bit with the process on this. Isn't the process basically initiated by the commission's approval of the project, and then you go through all of the planning and investigative stages?
At this time, this is a application with a concept, a sound concept that we've reviewed and done a site visit and done public hearings, but it has not been engineered yet. It has not been decided where the trail will be laid out, and it's a large enough piece of property that if there are issues that come up, like environmental issues or other things that need to be mitigated, we feel that there's enough room out there to be able to do that. But we will require, before we authorize any reimbursement of funds, a development plan be submitted to us and reviewed, all clearances necessary be in place, and that a use plan be in place for how this thing's going to be operated.
But the prerequisite for all of those plans being developed and reviewed and amended and approved, et cetera, or declined, is action today that allows that process to take place.
Yes, sir, and that's primarily because those kinds of things do involve a fairly sizable investment of time and resources, and until the city is able to get in a grant agreement with us, they really don't have the ability to do that. That's the same process we use for all of our grant programs.
Okay. Any more questions, Ms. Cobb? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Got Bobby Sanders, followed by Corey Sheary.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity of having time to speak to you about this matter. Myself, personally, I've got about 40 years invested in trail riding and racing in the state of Texas. I choose to live in the state of Texas, but most of the time we have to go out of state to race, to go out of state to ride. One example I can get to you is the Little Sahara State Park in Oklahoma. Little Sahara State Park brings in enough revenue that probably funds two-thirds of the other parks in the state. It's all revenue derived off of ATVs. The city of Childress has had two meetings. We've had over 100 people at the first meeting that said, yes, we would like to have this here. We've got approximately 256 ATV riders that live in the state in the city of Childress. I personally raced with some of them out of state. I've talked to several people in the surrounding towns. I've got motorcycle shops that's willing to come on board to help us with this thing. I've got numerous people that's willing to come on the board, free, gratis, to help us do this. Myself, I've dedicated the rest of my life. I'm retired, to help make a place that our children can enjoy. I'd like to ask the court to please consider this. Small communities need stuff. They need things for their children to do. Most of your riding anymore is not just a bunch of drunken bums. Most of it is all families and family-orientated. We've also got a program set up that we're going to train most of the children at 16 and under, because federal and state laws require most people wear helmets, have flags on your ATVs, everything be force-approved so that you don't catch anything on fire with mufflers. We will have an on-site manager. It won't be an everyday ordeal. We hope that within maybe by the first part of next year, if everything runs smooth, we can be up and running and maybe get this thing on a self-sufficient basis. Like I said, we've got numerous people that's willing to come hold the schools for us. We've got pro riders that's willing to come help the kids, show them how to ride safe. I'm involved at AMA and the MMA as far as racing goes. I've been assured that if a couple of years go by and we can get the motocross park on the right track, that we can get some races incorporated in with Oklahoma and Kansas. If we can do this, we can become more self-sufficient on the track, help us out with our entities, help us out with our funding. And also, you know, there's going to be a lot of clearing has to be done. A lot of tree trimming has to be done.
We're going to need to wrap up just a little bit.
Okay. We've already decided that all the trees, brush, and everything that we're going to cut is going to be placed strategically around the property to create wildlife habitat. Again, I'd like to thank you for my time. I see my red light's fixing to come on. And we'd ask that you folks help us. Like I said, I've got about 40 years experience in this. Can I just do one thing?
We need to stay on schedule, sir, if we could.
Okay.
One quick sentence.
Lake Whitney sits in the middle of a game preserve. Got one of the biggest racetracks in the state of Texas.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your interest. Coy Shearing, followed by Renee Griffith, followed by Kirby Brown.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, I'm Loy Snary.
Well, I can't
believe it. It was my printing, I'm sure.
No problem.
And I'm here on a different project. I'm from Bay City, and on behalf of Wellness Matagorda County Incorporated, which is a private and public partnership to address obesity, cardiovascular disease, and cancer in our county. We're here today to encourage your approval of the recommendation that has been made to you for a hike and bike trail, which will be part of a long-range plan that we have for a wellness center in Matagorda County to address those issues. Mayor Richard Canapic from Bay City and Superintendent Dick Walton from Bay City ISD send their regrets for not being able to be here, but Renee and I wanted to come up today and encourage your approval of that, and should you approve that, thank you for that very much.
Thank you, sir. Renee Griffith.
I'm Renee Griffith. I'm an RN from Matagorda County Hospital District, and I'm the Trauma Coordinator and Safety Officer, and I also co-chair Wellness Matagorda. And I would like to thank you for your consideration for approval of our grant. And as a trauma coordinator, you ATV riders should wear your helmet. Thank you.
Thanks. Kirby Brown. We always appreciate levity. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Kirby Brown, Executive Vice President of Texas Wildlife Association. And our members are hunters, conservationists, landowners, and land managers who own or control over 35 million acres of private land in Texas. I'm going to apologize because we really just heard about the proposed purchase of the trail project in Childress County, and I had not forwarded any discussion that we'd had at TWA in developing some criteria after the Crockett County site the last time. And we certainly support the concept of ATV trail areas in the right places. We think that's important. And many of our members have ATVs and use them and would like to use them in other places. Andy Goldblum and Tim Hodgett do great work, and they really get with the community and do a good job. And I'm sure the city's looking forward to moving forward. We developed some criteria, and our initial considerations were, number one, it needs to be a willing seller. Number two, it needs to be adjacent to a major highway so that traffic's already present and not bothering things. Number three, local, community, and county support. We think those are important. And we checked those boxes off on this one. Number four, surrounding landowner support and agreement. And in this case, again, I don't know much about it, but the configuration does seem to indicate that without that landowner support, this could be a little problematic. And I think we would like to consider that further in our thought process. Number five, does not impact the economics of the surrounding landowners, either the operation or the potential land values. And looking at this, this is a wildlife operation. It's a hunting operation. Also, land in that part of the country is rising steadily in value, but it's for its wildlife recreation value. So that's a concern we'd like to have time to look at. We're concerned about wildlife, habitat, erosion, and cultural considerations, particularly of game and non-game species of concern. Just listening, the turkey roost up there, there are very few turkey roosts. In fact, we were involved with a project restoring turkey roosts in the panhandle, and so that raises another red flag to us. Seven, and are there other nearby opportunities for use? And of those, we know the Red River is open, and I don't think it's but a couple of miles from there. I could be incorrect, but I'd like to understand more. And finally, we would like to understand and have input on a management plan with the city for both wildlife use and impact on its neighbors, and how the operation would be mitigated, you know, both with the private lands and otherwise. So if there's a way to defer the decision to November, that would be our preference if we could do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Brown? Tim, I've got one more question. My question is, in our business, what we require real estate will be a preliminary approval, spend some study money, and get final approval. I realize our process here is final approval subject to staff review of the work. Is there a way to modify this to give approval for the money to go do the study, but also further investigate whether we can address some of the concerns? I have always had the concern with the adjacent landowners. I know we can never get that perfect. Personally, I'd like to support this project, but I wonder if a little more time would give us the opportunity to work through some of this a little more. But we need to authorize some money to go do that properly. Is it possible to modify it?
It would be at your discretion. I believe we could enter into a preliminary contract with them for assessment, and then come back if that assessment is positive, and make recommendations for going ahead with the funding of the acquisition and development. I just think you're hesitant to deal with a piece of property that you don't own. And I think that would be the potential issue here, whether this existing landowner that owns the property that the city is opposing to acquire would be willing to have that kind of thing going on. There is a sales contract on this piece of property. So I think I would need to get city's input on how that would affect their project.
Well, no, I was not suggesting doing work on Mr. Nixon's property. I was suggesting continuing a conversation, having perhaps a more expanded conversation than say it may have occurred already, but doing some of the preliminary work so he also understands how the trails are going to be laid out, what some mitigation elements are, and I think continuing the conversation about possibly purchasing that part to the north to the extent he'd entertain it. He's not under pressure to do that, but if the grant could be expanded, it seems very logical, to the extent there were willing buyer and seller there, to enlarge this property, leave him the water rights, and move that direction. Whether that's possible, I don't know. And we may look at all of it and choose to vote for it over the same objections in a couple of months. Now, the other commissioners may disagree. I'm just raising the question. But Commissioner Holmes, you got it.
Tim, we heard you and others say that the other adjoining landowners had given their approval on this project.
Correct.
When I look at what I believe to be the boundary of this project, it looks to me like the affected property is maybe 10 or 15% of the boundary, which means like 80 or 90% of the boundary owners on the north side of the property, north and west side, they have all approved that. Is that what I understand?
Yeah. My name is Andy Goldblum. I'm manager of the Recreational Trails Program. The boundary, the railroad boundary on the northeast
right.
side, everything, that's the same landowner that's selling this piece of property. They own about 10, 15,000 acres up to the Red River, so they're in support of selling this piece. That's basically their land between the railroad and the highway that isn't as valuable to them for their ranching operation as their other side. The fellow on the northeast side, the kind of the longer boundary at the top there, still may in concept be opposed to the project. I've spent time with him, drove around his property. He's a cattle operation, and after we drove around the property and looked at fence lines, his comment was, well, I guess this probably won't impact me that much one way or the other. Certainly, you know, it has the potential to impact Mr. Nixon's property. I think we're talking about economic values here, and that can be monitored and with our wildlife staff looking at what those impacts to the wildlife are. So it's, granted, without that triangle, this would be the perfect property in between the railroad and the highway. You hear highway noise on any part of the property, and every couple times a day, freight trains go by. But regardless, we'd be willing to work with the adjacent landowner to mitigate those impacts.
I have one question also. Where is the facility on the Red River?
There is no facility on the Red River. That was one of the rivers with the Canadian that
right.
was exempted from the bill. And right now, what I understand, there's not that much riding in that section of the Red River. North of the city on, I think, Highway 83, the bridge crosses the Red River. And people, I'm not sure if people can get down there or not. And again, riding up and down there, you'd be... to promote that would probably impact a lot more landowners.
That's the Prairie Dog Fork?
No, that's actually the Red River.
Okay.
I believe. I'm not from up in that area.
Okay, any further questions? Commissioner Friedkin.
Tim, just to summarize, if we approve this, we would then begin subsequent studies, correct? I mean,
correct.
Wildlife impact and so forth. So that would come next.
Correct.
Okay.
But it does not come back to us at that point. They go close the land
and
do what they wanted to studies pass. You do have the ability to enlarge the grant. If we prove it today, you have the ability to enlarge the grant if you reach a group and Mr. Nixon acquired the property.
Yes, we could. We would, I think, the league would like to come back to you with an amended project at that point and ask for your permission to, if the city were so inclined, to acquire the additional property.
Okay.
With special sensitivity to this particular track and Mr. Nixon's concerns, I move approval of the staff recommendation.
Second.
Second. From Commissioner Parker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much. That was on everything. Okay. Agenda item number 6, voting access grant funding, Tim Hogsett.
Our voting access program provides 75% matching federal funds for voting access, boat ramps predominantly. It is federal pass-through money from the Sport Fish Restoration Act. These are local government applications. The local governments, once these facilities are built, agree to operate and maintain them. We received 7 applications for new ramp construction totaling $2.3 million. And in light of time, I will skip through these proposals. They're in your package of what is being proposed to be constructed. and move right to the recommendation. We're recommending funding for boat access projects listed in Exhibit A in the amount of $1,513,643 be approved.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Hodgson? I have no speakers indicated. We have a motion. Motion by Holt, second by Parker. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Thank you.
Next item, number 7, Target Range Grant.